When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Transfer Window. This is the podcast that not only takes you inside the biggest deals at the biggest clubs in world football, but brings you insight and analysis of the issues that matter every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. I'm Jory McFarlane, and joining me are pundits extraordinaire Duncan Castles and Ian McGarry. On today's Your Questions Answered Transfer Podcast, is Jadon Sancho destined for a return to England? And do Manchester City have any contractual sway as part of their summer deal with Dortmund? Twitter has been aswirl with rumour about a Saudi takeover of Manchester United. We separate fact from fiction. And amid Maurizio Sarri's problems at Chelsea, is player power a growing issue at the biggest clubs in the game? Okay, well, he's tearing up the Bundesliga, and we have a question from @affirmation93 about Jadon Sancho and the potential for him returning to England. Duncan, what's the latest?
I think there's great potential for Jadon Sancho to return to England. It's more a question of timing rather than anything else, and obviously who's going to be prepared to put the money down. Sancho's now established himself in the England team. He's a key member of the Dortmund side. He's scored 7 Bundesliga goals, set up 11 in 22 appearances this season. He's demonstrated his quality, and he's at, I think importantly, he's at a club who, when they sign players like Jadon Sancho, it's with a clear vision that you buy him for a certain price and then you sell him for significant profit down the line. That's Borussia Dortmund's business model, has been for multiple years now. Pick up individuals of great talent like Christian Pulisic, who's now on his way to Chelsea at a limited price, give them the opportunity to play as teenagers are young professionals, which they might not have had at other clubs, allow their market value to increase and then cash in 2-3 years down the line when the big offer comes, reinvest that in the team. That's the way Dortmund compete at the top level in Germany and compete in the Champions League. So Sancho is for sale. Question is whether he'll be allowed to move this summer. If you listen to Michael Zorc, the Dortmund director of football, he says that Sancho will definitely play with Dortmund next year. I think there's a possibility, if a big enough offer comes in, that he will be sold this summer, but we're probably talking over 100 million euros as a minimum price. I don't see that there's great pressure from Sancho's end to move this summer. I think he and the people advising him have been very happy with the way his career's developed at Dortmund, so they wouldn't see a difficulty with staying that extra season there. But if, for example, Manchester United, who clearly have had their eye on younger players, that the priority is to recruit younger players, they like players with star potential, commercial value. They've had a shortfall on the right wing for a long period of time. It's an area where they've been looking to recruit. So, Sancho ticks all those boxes for Manchester United. If they were to come in with a very high offer, then that would tempt Dortmund and may also tempt Sancho and his advisors into saying, this is our opportunity to go back to England now. Let's take it while it's there.
I do think this is a hard sell, as weird as that may sound, for Manchester United to Jadon Sancho. Purely on the basis that he made a very big decision to leave English football only 18 months ago and joined Dortmund. And in that time, has established himself as a first-team regular. Now, the reason he left was because he was getting no game time, and worse than that for him, there was no immediate potential for him to get significant game time. And he went to Dortmund on the basis of what, as Duncan has just explained, i.e. that they give young players, teenagers, the opportunity in the first team, allow them to develop their talents naturally, organically, with a view to obviously improving their team. But as Rafa Honigstein explained 3 episodes ago in the transfer window, the way the financial model at Dortmund is to sell one player per year, per summer transfer window, in order to boost their finances, but also recruit at lower levels. So that effectively what you're looking at is, sell Christian Pulisic this summer to Chelsea. They've probably already got 5 candidates of who they think is the next Christian Pulisic, and they will buy one of them for under 20 million euros. Now, if you compare Jadon Sancho's appearances and stats, I won't go back over them because Duncan's already said, although I would also point out that he's played in 6 of Dortmund's Champions League games with 1 goal and 1 assist, as well as 22 appearances, 7 goals, 11 assists in the Bundesliga. Phil Foden, 18. Also a prodigy player, etc. at Manchester City, has made a total of 8 appearances in the Premier League this season for Manchester City. And in fact, has made as many appearances in the FA and EFL Cup as he has in the Premier League. That's 8. He has 5 goals in the cup competitions, but no goals and no assists, albeit, of course, he's a central midfielder and not necessarily as attacking as Sancho is. Callum Hudson-Odoi, another player who we know is very much coveted by Bayern Munich, 4 appearances in the Premier League, FA Cup 2, Europa League 5. So there's the hard sell. Jadon Sancho, yeah, we'll pay you better. Yeah, you'll get to come play in your country of birth, etc., etc. But we can't guarantee you'll start every Premier League game because, quite frankly, that's not how we do it. If Manchester United do that or say that to him, then fair enough. But I've never yet known a club to promise any 18-year-old that they'll play the majority of football matches when they're changing club, never mind country as well. So I guess a price tag of in excess of 100 million euros necessitates the manager to use him. But again, if he has 2 or 3 bad games, then he's just as liable as anyone else to be dropped out of the squad. So I take Duncan's point that finances and prestige may well combine to see him tempted to leave Dortmund this summer. But with a Bundesliga title very potentially, almost getting there to be won, as it were, Champions League football again next season, if I were him, I would stay in the Bundesliga for another season, see how things pan out. And then a year from June, July, it could well be Real Madrid and Barcelona, as well as Manchester United, Man City and whoever else who are interested in, and his options will be much greater, and his financial potential for earning will also be much greater as well, for having played another season in Germany. So I don't think it's a very straightforward transfer as much as I think Manchester United may well believe that to be. And of course, you've got the question of Jesse Lingard, who's been playing in the right wing position, preferred by Sancho as well, another young Englishman who I think you've got to say has developed throughout the last year and a half. Certainly, is probably a first pick for England now as well, as the same as Sancho is. I think there are difficulties and complications in that one.
Duncan, we've talked in the past about Mo Salah and Kevin De Bruyne being a millstone around Jose Mourinho's neck, and the way that the public perception is that he let those players go. Is this going to be the same with Pep Guardiola and Sancho?
I think there's a lot of discontent amongst elements of the Manchester City support that they've lost Sancho and they've lost Brahim Diaz in almost successive transfer windows for limited fees. And they see those players, I think particularly Sancho, and they wonder why Sancho wasn't given the opportunity and someone like Riyad Mahrez was signed instead. And I think there's also frustration that Phil Foden's not getting as much playing time as he, well, let's say he moved to Dortmund, as he would get at Dortmund if he was at a Champions League club of that level. I think it's tough for Guardiola in that, tough is maybe the wrong word to use, because he's been blessed with the best set of attacking forwards, wide players, players in the position that Sancho and Diaz play, that any manager's probably ever had in the Premier League. That's, you know, Manchester City's squad is strong. It's particularly strong in those areas. And I know Guardiola was asked in his press conference ahead of the Champions League game this week about the players that City have allowed to leave, and whether they should have been retained. And he came up with what was a pretty pragmatic answer, which is that not all the players around the world can play in Manchester City. The space is the space, so it is what it is. And you can't really argue with him with that. And he's, you know, he's under pressure to win the Champions League. He's under pressure to win the Premier League each season. He's now under pressure to win quadruples. Whenever, until they get knocked out of a competition, he's getting that question almost on a press every press conference: can you win the quadruple? He's fortunate enough to have Abu Dhabi's resources behind him. He's fortunate enough to have the wealthiest, you know, the most expensive squad in the history of the game to work with. But you can understand why he asks for that, because of the expectations placed on him, and there is the ownership has the potential to do it. Now, if you've got that squad of players, then you can't really do what Dortmund do and concentrate on developing youngsters and giving them lots of playing time. You can give them more playing time. I think he's actually quite conservative in the amount of time he gives players like Foden. He quite often uses some of his key players who have a lot of miles on the clock during a season and are asked to run a lot in games where you'd think he'd give them a rest. But essentially, he's doing what he thinks is best for winning titles, and he did win the title last season. He's in good position to win the title again this season. We'll see whether he can do it in the Champions League. Just on Manchester City and Jadon Sancho, so it's worth clearing up a point that I think there's a kind of misunderstanding that when City allowed Sancho to go to Dortmund, they got a buyback clause which was favourable in City's side, in that they could get him for a set fee if they decided to bring him back at a certain time. That has been disseminated. I think Manchester City were quite happy for that story to be left in the press, because it made it look less embarrassing for them that they'd lost this player. Recently, Michael Zorc, the director of football at Dortmund, commented publicly on that. He made it clear that it wasn't a buyback clause. What he said is, it's at most a matching right. That would have no significance for us at all, apart from having to talk with City if an offer came up. But that's very theoretical. So basically, what City got put in the transfer deal was, if you have an offer that you are considering accepting from another club, you have to present that offer to us to give us the opportunity to match it, which is very different from having the kind of buyback clauses that Barcelona have inserted in the deals of a number of the young players they sold, particularly to the Premier League, where they could buy them back at set fixed prices in the future if they developed.
One other thing to add on this one, Johnny, is that football coaches at the level of Guardiola, Mourinho, etc., they're like any boss at the top of a multi-billion-pound industry. The buck stops with them. If they don't succeed, they get fired. Therefore, they trust in their own methods and tried and tested players. Anyone who's watched Jadon Sancho play and been excited, and that's very understandable by the freedom with which he plays. He's prone to a little bit of showboating, nutmegging, etc., etc. He's got a fast pace, and he can dribble and beat players. Pep Guardiola hates that. He never wants to risk possession of the ball. The only person he ever trusted to do that was Leo Messi. other than that, it's pass and move, pass and move. Sancho doesn't do that. Sancho dribbles, Sancho puts the ball at risk. And the Manchester City fans who are upset or discontent that they're missing out on an exciting talent, yeah, you could have him back at Manchester City, but he wouldn't play. Not until he had established himself as someone who could fit into Guardiola's methodology, which I think is probably the reason why he left in the first place. So I think a new home in a team like Manchester United under someone like Solskjaer might be a better place for him. But as I said, I think another season at Dortmund I think would be his best option.
We've got a question here from at SwapPPPC. Duncan, one horse-sized Jurgen Klopp or 10 duck-sized Jurgen Klopps? Who would you rather fight? Let it be said that we don't get the good, intelligent questions here at the Transfer Window podcast.
Well, I'm a pacifist, so I don't want to have a physical fight with anyone. But if I had to choose between 10 ducks and one horse, I think I'd probably go for the 10 ducks rather than the horse, because the horse is going to be a good bit bigger than me and it might clippity-clop all over the top of me.
I've suddenly got this image of Duncan surrounded by 10 ducks saying, "Not the face, not the face."
Okay, we've got a number of questions from a number of listeners about the Saudi takeover potentially going to take place at Manchester United, certainly according to Twitterati rumour. Duncan, is there anything in this at all?
Yeah, there is something in it. There is an interest from Saudi Arabia and Manchester United. It's quite long-standing. It's part of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's what he calls his 2030 vision, in which he's taking elements of what Qatar and Abu Dhabi have done in terms of buying into world sports, European sports, European football as a strategic to kind of stop soft power tool. He sees the attraction of that. There have been discussions on the Saudi side about it. I was told when this story first emerged earlier in the season, I was told that the Saudis had basically backed off after the killing of Jamal Khashoggi and the rightfully extremely bad press they got around that. I see the story re-emerging at the weekend that the Saudi media minister has now made a statement saying that they don't have any intention to buy into Manchester United. I would treat that with a large pinch of salt. And I think if you want to see the value of Saudi Arabian media statements, you just got to look at the statements they made after Khashoggi's murder in the Saudi embassy and how rapidly those changed and how they contradicted each other. The Glazers have spent quite a lot of time in Saudi Arabia over the last year or so. I think there's definitely elements of that just simply involved in trying to secure more sponsorship money. There was a meeting with a Saudi Minister of State in November with Avram Glazer. Richard Arnold attended. They met his name is Mohammed Abu Saq at the time. There was quite a lot made of that in the press. I actually contacted someone who was involved in the meeting, was told that it had nothing to do with a takeover, that meeting. It was Abu Saq's son had been a representative of STC Telecom, who are a sponsor of Manchester United. And so the family had developed relations with the Glazers through that sponsorship deal. And the visit was as a part of the friendly relationship between the Glazers and the family. It's one that had happened before. However, this is definitely something to pay attention to. It fits Saudi Arabian plans. And I think as Ian discussed at the time in the podcast when the story initially came up, the Glazers are interest, their interest in Manchester United is a financial one. If enough money was put down on the table as an offer for the club, I would be extremely surprised if they were not to take that offer seriously. And I would also be surprised if, you know, if they considered the deal to be valuable enough to them, and we're talking, you know, multiple billions of pounds as a realistic selling price for Manchester United. I'd be surprised if they weren't prepared to take it if the numbers were high enough wherever that proposal came from.
Some people may be surprised to learn or to hear, I guess, that through multiple discussions over the last 2-3 years with people who are called brokers, and by that I mean not necessarily not stockbrokers in the traditional sense, but City people who conduct both due diligence and analysis for potential investors in football in England, will quite freely tell you that Manchester City is the only Premier League club at this moment in time which is not up for sale. So let's just disregard, but let's say obviously there are a lot less attractive clubs to buy in the Premier League than Manchester United. But at the same time, you're looking at very serious finance. I think the club's market capitalization value is running around the 3.8 billion mark over the last week or so. It topped out at just over 4 billion about 4 or 5 months ago. The Glazers, I think, would realistically sell at over 4 billion. And if anyone's going to be able to come up with that kind of money, well, I think the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia might just be the perfect person to look to, especially with what Duncan's very comprehensive described, the 2030 vision for the Emirates in going forward. So, yeah, this could happen at any moment. And part of the process is non-disclosure agreements, which means that any negotiations, any figures that are discussed in meetings which are private are marked without prejudice on any documentation, which, along with the non-disclosure agreement, without prejudice means cannot be discussed out with the people who were involved throughout those conversations, and if so, there can be legal recourse. So while we in the media love to have a bit of, you know, playful banter and a bit of speculation about this kind of, you know, obviously major story, if Manchester is going to be sold, it's not without a foundation, that's for sure. But at the same time, getting accurate information is also very, very difficult. And I suspect that if it happens, we'll probably find out about it on the day that it's announced to the Stock Exchange in New York, rather than, you know, 3 months before. So it's certainly one to keep an eye on. And obviously, we on the Transfer Window podcast will keep our listeners as up to date on the absolute sort of cutting edge of this, as we always aim to do. So, yeah, I agree with Duncan. We need to all just be on the lookout for developments on that story.
We've got a question from at John Gregg Live. Is player power an issue at Manchester United and Chelsea?
Well, it's certainly been an issue at Chelsea. I think we all know that. Through the years, numerous managers have gone as a result of players deciding, first of all, that they don't believe in him anymore, or don't believe in his system, or his methodology, that then exhibits itself on the pitch and performs his tail off in the way that we've seen very recently under Maurizio Sarri, in the comprehensive defeats by Bournemouth and Manchester United, and excuse me, and then that's when people start to talk, and you know what happens is that Roman Abramovich's closest advisors, who do actually attend the games, and some of them do speak to the players. Bruce Buck, the chairman, Eugene Tenenbaum, one of the directors, Marina Granovskaya, who's got obviously based at their training ground in Cobham, speak to players, speak to coaches, etc., etc., that's when it gets serious, is when players bitching about the manager is then picked up by the execs, who then feel forced to have a discussion about what's being said, and then are forced to take it to the boss. And obviously he makes the decision. With regards to Manchester United, Duncan will know more than me, but clearly there was an issue under Jose Mourinho, and I'm led to believe, Duncan, that there was a kind of French axis to the discontent in terms of Anthony Martial and Paul Pogba being at the centre of the dressing room malcontent.
Vive la Revolution!
Indeed. Duncan, was it Vive la Revolution or Dive la Revolution?
Well, obviously player power had an effect at Manchester United, in that it turned into a pretty much direct conflict between Paul Pogba and Jose Mourinho over how the team should play and how he should be allowed to play within the team. And well, with Mino Raiola on the sidelines offering his client to every club around and threatening Manchester United with taking their star player away. And I think that's the core of player power at every club now. The wage bills, the individual wages for star players are higher than they've ever been. The marketing power, the commercial influence of individual players is greater than it's ever been. Clubs are more aware of that than ever. So unless you have a situation, and I don't think there are many clubs where the players are actually fully under control at present in the Premier League. And I think probably the best example would be Manchester City, where the power structure is very clear, in the sense that Abu Dhabi provide the cash. They delegate almost all responsibility to Ferran Soriano for the running of the club. He delegates the football side to Cheeky Bergiristan. He appoints a coach in tandem with Soriano, who has more control over the way the club is run than any other English football club. He's the best paid individual in that football department. And his authority is pretty much absolute, in that if a player is prepared to go up against Guardiola, he will be put down by Bergiristan, because they believe the coach and the structure of the team, retaining the right attitude and behaviour of players within the squad. And I've heard Bergiristan talking on record about that, the importance of how a player, talent, I think talent gets you across the doorstep at Manchester City, but behaviour is what keeps you there, and behaviour and attitude is what keeps you there. So that they have managed to control it by having a very distinct structure, and not leaving it all to the manager to exert authority when required. Bergiristan, Soriano will step in and reassert the fact that what Guardiola decides for the football department is key. Unless you have that structure, and unless you have that belief in the manager and the priority of the manager's power and authority and determination to set the direction of the club, then you are going to get issues as you've had at Manchester United. And I can tell you that from a member of the coaching staff, that it wasn't just the French players who were involved in asking for Mourinho to be dismissed. They believe that one of the English players called Woodward after the Liverpool match and asked that the manager be removed. And then you have a club like Chelsea, where you know the players know from repeat experience how easy it is to get rid of the manager, and therefore the player power is even more dangerous than anywhere else. So I think it's definitely an issue at Chelsea at the moment. At Manchester United, it's under control because Solskjaer has got the players on his side. He's still in the honeymoon period. Everything's more or less going to plan. He hasn't come into conflict with many of the players yet, so it's not a threat to him, but certainly has the potential to re-emerge there, just as it is, has the potential to emerge at most Premier League clubs.
Interesting one, Duncan, thinking about what you just said, player power getting managers a sack. It could work in reverse at Manchester United. What if the board decided that they want to get another manager, not Solskjaer, and the players rebel against the board regarding who they appoint rather than who they sack?
It's a good point. I think it is a factor when we're talking about whether Solskjaer continues as Manchester United manager. He clearly has the supporters behind him, the overwhelming majority of the supporters, and the players like having him there. So it makes it much easier for the Glazers to go down that line. As, of course, do the results. You know, every time Solskjaer goes to somewhere like Stamford Bridge and takes a victory away, it becomes easier for the Glazers to say he's the man in situ, we like the job he's doing, we're going to give him a long-term contract.
We're going to move it on to our Donkey Awards. So, the Theresa May Award for Strong and Stable Leadership. That is today's donkey. Ian, you're always the man that gives out the nominations. And of course, Mr. Castles decides who receives this award. What's your nominations for today?
First of all, can I just say thank you to our listeners for being so subtle and intelligent to know that, in fact, the Strong and Stable Leadership Award is, in fact, a sarcastic reference. Just before we start this one. My first nomination... As I
speak for yourself.
As I open up the golden envelope, is Chelsea's acting CEO and executive director, Mina Granovskaya. Someone who appears to apply the chaos theory to managing a football club. But, you know, you've got to give her some credit. Invariably, given the trophy count, gets it right. So people have said before that there's no stability at Chelsea, there's no legacy for any manager, etc., etc. What they have got is a whole load of trophies in the cabinet, every single one that you can win domestically and in Europe. only one that's missing is the Club World Cup. So despite the current travails of Maurizio Sarri, who of course was Mourinho's choice in the end, then that's the first nomination. The second is Ed Woodward of Manchester United, a man who also seems to apply chaos theory to his management of a football club, but not with so much success, unfortunately, with United obviously being on their, I think, fifth manager since Ralf Ferguson retired in 2013, and trophies won in that time, FA Cup by Louis van Gaal, and League Cup and Europa League by Jose Mourinho. Maybe shoots of spring with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, still to be realised, but you have to see the transfer policy in the last at least 3 years has been nothing short of shotgun. So stable and strong, we'll have to worry about that. The third and final nomination is, and this will come as a surprise to a lot of people, is actually Daniel Levy of Tottenham Hotspur, a man who really barely puts a foot wrong when it comes to managing the club. His club is the most profitable and the least in debt of all Premier League clubs until now, when he's presided over the most expensive stadium build in the history of football, one which is already at least three times more than the original quote. It's already 9 months behind schedule in terms of opening. In fact, that I hear from my newspaper colleagues that there's a kind of sweep about on the weekly bulletin on the lottery of when that first game will be played at New White Hart Lane. And most of the choices have come next season. So over to Duncan to award the most prestigious trophy in football.
It's a tough one. I think this is the tightest field since the David Cameron. It's got absolutely nothing to do with me award when we had to decide between which of Jurgen Klopp's many excuses took that particular prize. I think amongst those three, deserving candidates. I'm tempted to go for Marina Granovskaya. I am also highly amused by Daniel Levy's penny pinching turning into hundreds of millions of extra costs on White Hart Lane, and probably a whole season's worth of delay by the end of it. But I'm going to go for Ed Woodward, chief executive of the richest club in England, inherits the post from David Gill and Ferguson, won the Premier League title at a canter the previous season, and since then not even got close to a Premier League title. As you say, 5 managerial appointments in 6 years. And can we really see them going close to the Premier League title next season with Woodward and whoever he and the Glazer family decide to make permanent manager? I'm not sure about that.
Well, it's time to slam this particular transfer window shut. But fear not, we're going to be back on Friday to fulfil all your podcasting needs. To continue the debate, we are all on Twitter. You can find us at our own Transfer Window official account, at Transfer Podcast, so give us a follow there. You can find me at Johnny R. McFarlane, and our pundits are at GarboSJ for Ian and at Duncan Castles. If you like the podcast, and we know thousands of you do, do us a favour, go online and give us a 5-star review at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, as this helps us reach as many listeners as possible. Until Friday, thanks for listening.